something from 1 John, the 2nd chapter, the 15th verse, which just very simply says to us, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Mm-hmm. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh and the desires of the eyes and the pride of life is not from the Father, but it is from the world. Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking about worldly matters when we go to talking about politicians and what they should be doing. What we expect for the people that we elect into these positions is to be people elected by the people for the people. That is not what we've seen in the last 50-some years that I've been a witness to. That is not what has taken place. So you got to have a certain mindset to understand that most of what we're talking about is moral issues. But if no morals exist in the person that has the authority, what is he going to do? He's not going to treat the people that need the help in the way that they need to be treated because their heart is not in the right place. Number one. That's pretty much my take on it. So I cannot put all my confidence in man. The Bible tells me not to do that. And I don't do that. I don't care if you are Democratic or Republican. I cannot put all my confidence in you because I only know what you write in your resume. I don't get that opportunity to see what your true character is because I'm not even that close to you. I have to take the word of that comes from a third party, whatever, how many ways down the line information is coming into me to make a determination of should I vote for this person? Because, like I say, anybody can write anything in a resume. Mm-hmm. I hope that explains my position on it because I'm going to stay under the shadows of the wings of the Almighty, the creator of this universe. I'm not going to get caught up in the religious stuff. I'm not going to get caught up with these guys sitting in these pulpits because you can get out of my church. Well, then you got the wrong idea about what the church even means because it never is your church.
Right.
The church belongs to Christ. He is the one that set that up. You just happen to be a shepherd therein. And if you're not under his, following his direction and his truth, because you need to choose who will be the king over your life. If the world is king over your life, then you're going to receive the things of the world. And I believe that. That's been my experience in all my life. I yield back.
You know, I was just going to ask the question. I know the Word of God says that all souls are mine. And that's exactly what he means. I don't care, big, small, or whatever category we want to put them in. And I think this is where I think people misappropriate their positions. Mm-hmm. Because they feel like they can lord over people and someone. And God never told us to lord over anyone.
That's right.
Come on.
And even pastors, he said, because if Jesus came to serve, him being God, and he told his leaders, you are servants. Mm-hmm. But I think, like this man says, was taking people, telling them that you're not fit, you're demonized, and he was casting judgment. And the Word of God said, judge not, lest ye be judged.
Yeah.
So how are you going to tell people they're demons because they want to be Democrats? God never told you to make that call. So you are all the way in your flesh. So who really needs to sit down is the one who's made that statement and humble himself and get
the Dr. Samson, right, listen to what he said. He said, get out of my church.
He said, get out of my church. But you know what kind of spirit that was talking?
Yes.
That was not the Lord talking at all. Because he said, Lord, upon this rock I build my church. That's what God said. That's what I heard. Okay. And he said, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. So Amen. Now if you're preaching that kind of, and I, you know, if they're preaching that kind of hellfire towards the children of God, do you know how many people will walk out of there? And God said he's going to hold them more accountable because of the position that they're in. They're mm-hmm. supposed to know the word of God. They're supposed to know it. And they're supposed to preach it in humility.
Right.
Because guess what? All of us need Jesus. We all do, right? And so I don't think the brother might have thought he arrived, but he really got caught.
He thought he arrived. Mike, what's your take on it? I'm interested to hear what you have to say. You've been pretty quiet today.
Well, I don't have the biblical knowledge that all of you do, but I do know the difference between right and wrong and good and evil. And if you go about your life with good in your heart and you oppose evil, I'm good with all that. But the problem is, being human beings, and Dr. Demery speaks to this all the time, we are corruptible. And I've seen it in local government here because I was part of it, not part of the evil side, but I've seen people use their standing or their position for evil ways. Mm-hmm. So we're all corruptible. It's very hard for human beings to not go after the things that give them pleasure. Once again, the things that that drive them. Again, we're back to money, power, and fame. Let me see. We've covered so much here. Let me go back to who we vote for.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's something we covered earlier. And I think too much, if not all the time, we're pushed in the corner and have to vote for the least of evils.
Ooh.
And I think we talked earlier today about how Trump got into office. And this is my belief, and you guys can all disagree with me. Don't send the pitchforks and the torches to my house, please. But Trump got elected because people were sick and tired of the status quo. They were done with politicians. They knew what politicians were, what they are, and what their motives were, and they were sick of it. So they decided to vote somebody into office who wasn't necessarily a politician. My computer's doing weird things.
Yeah, you break it.
But they got in.
I can't hear you. Yeah, you can keep
working
out.
Hey, log out and log back in, Mike. And I wanted to wait till Mike comes back because I want to address something that he said. And that is, people voted for Trump because the things that I heard was that, oh, he's a businessman. Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of people voted for him because he was a celebrity or somebody they saw on TV. Okay. So he was his own brand, and he was advertising his brand throughout his run for office. Okay, so there's Mike right there. Mike, you back? Okay, and I was just speaking on something that you said. People voted in Trump, and I'm gonna repeat myself, because he was a celebrity, and you heard over and over again, we want to select a businessman because that would probably be the best person suited to run this country. Okay, all right, if that's your philosophy. But if you did your homework, you'd find out he was a four-time bankrupted businessman. He was a man that was given over $400 million from his dad that he blew. Okay? And if you're looking and paying close attention, now, I don't want to hear about Hunter Biden's laptop. I don't want to hear about anything else. I want to talk about this right here specifically. And if you did your research, you would understand that he was also a racist. Okay? He and his dad denied black people for moving into apartments in New York City. Okay? He also said, I would never have a black accountant. I don't want a black man running my business. He was also the one at a rally saying, oh, look at my African-American over there. Oh, isn't he great? So let's get back to the facts. If we had done our homework, people picked him, and he is nothing like he portrays himself to be. Right now, we've never had a president that's 2 times impeached, 4 times indicted, 91 charges behind him. And I was reading something earlier today that, well, I'm not going to go back into that right now, about the whole scandal along the way. If you remember in New York City, when there was a strike and he was building a building and the concrete workers were on strike, he was the only one who was able to get concrete because he had ties to the mafia. So, guys and gals, if you think about this, if you want to go out and elect him, then what does that say to the world? You've got an indicted, impeached, all types of scandal, including rape, and not to forget the fraud charge he has faced in New York. And I don't care who you are. Don't tell me that all of this is a mistake. They got it all wrong. Whether he goes to prison or not, that's a whole different story. That's up to the DOJ and whoever does those things right here. But you're not going to tell me, and you've already heard the things that he said. Are you forgetting January 6th? No president, including Biden, has ever done anything like that. The attack Hamas put on Israel, okay? He praised Hamas. So, Mike, you can get back to your point, brother.
Well, my point, and I'll try to be brief about it. Trump got elected because people were sick and tired of the status quo. They were done with the Republican side, the Democrat side, the liberals. They were done with all of it. And people are lazy, by the way. The Matt, I worked with my friend, and William knows him. He was a meat cutter from Ralph's, Dwight Hunt. And he would say, the masses are the asses. And he's right, because people won't, they're lazy.
Lazy.
They're inherently lazy. They won't do their research. They won't look at stuff. And they elected Trump because they just didn't want the same old garbage going on. Excuse me. So, it wasn't, again, people tend to vote emotionally. They don't tend to vote rationally or logically. And that's what happened with Trump. That's how he got elected in office. People were hoping for something new, something different, a change. They wanted somebody that wasn't a lifelong politician. They wanted somebody that was, you know, whether you like it or respect it or not, he was viewed as a businessman. He wasn't viewed as a politician. That's how he got elected.
Right.
If I can add one thing, Mike, that's
on. Yeah, please.
Mike, listen. They had 8 years of a presidency preceding Trump that really enraged a lot of people whose hearts and minds are not in the right place. It had a lot to do with him getting into office also. That's why over 60-some million people are still supportive of this man in spite of anything that's happening. I believe that to be true, but if you think about the 8 years that we had, we didn't have all of this stuff night after night.
There it is.
It was more of a boring time then because the man was getting things done. This man comes into office and took credit for things that this man did.
They all do.
To give him credit for that. And he had nothing to do with where the economy was. That was from things that happened 8 years of the Obama administration.
All of them will still take credit for it.
Well, yeah, the problem is every politician would take credit for the previous president's accomplishments. But see, the thing about it is, Bush didn't leave Obama anything to take credit for because because Bush had destroyed the economy. Yeah, and see, and this is the thing that a lot of, and I don't know what your political affiliation, Mike, is, and I don't want to know. I don't care.
I hate both. I equally hate both sides.
You're an independent because you hate everybody. I understand that. I understand that. And I love you, brother. I'm going to love you before, during, and after the show. It doesn't matter your position. My point is, and like Danny so eloquently put, the stock market had dropped to almost half when Bush left the White House. The economy was in shambles. We're talking about jobs. We're talking about the everything, infrastructure, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And fast forward, when Obama, the Bush administration, when he left the White House, the stock market, I believe, had dropped. I know it had dropped because I'm a stockbroker. I was a former stockbroker. Almost in half. Okay. And Obama added 10,000 points to it. It went from like 9 to 19,000. So when Trump took over, he was riding a wave, brother. The difference is Obama had nothing to celebrate or to ride when he came. Trump took credit for everything, but would not take the blame when things went wrong. He always said it. And if you look at your history, because I've been following this for a long, 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 long time. When Clinton was in the White House, the country was in a surplus. When the Republicans took over, it went into a deficit. Mm-hmm. Just follow the math. Every time a Democrat was in the White House, it went up. Republicans, and then when Bush, oh my God. And then with Trump, I'll tell you something else. Trump lost over $3 million jobs. And I don't care what you think about Biden, he added 13 million. Do the math. That's simple enough
William, I got to ask you a question because it's probably my misunderstanding of things, but we're currently, I believe, somewhere around $33 trillion in debt.
And Trump added a quarter of that to the deficit.
As long as I can remember, we have been in debt. So I don't understand when you say there was a surplus.
When Clinton, check it out.
We didn't have a debt at that time.
He left a surplus. It was a surplus.
Why are we $33 trillion in debt?
Well, guess what? Trump added over a quarter of that.
You're telling me at some point we didn't have a debt, and yet years, decades, we have been accumulating trillions of dollars
in
debt.
Let me correct myself.
I don't understand the surplus part. You're saying we have a surplus. But we've been in debt for as long as I can remember. America's been in debt, and the debt has been growing.
Yes.
So when you say there was a surplus, I got a tough time understanding that, and it may be.
The way that works is think of it this way: think of yourself setting a budget and being under budget, and that accumulating in each time over, say, for instance, the 3 or 4 years that you're in office. So that is a surplus. We've got more than what we've got more remaining than what we anticipated.
So you spent for that period of time.
You earn more. You earn more than you spent for that period of time.
Okay.
Not overall, because the debt goes.
I don't want to say how it turned out. I don't want to say they spent less or they got more money. I don't know. All I know is they ended up with more money than what.
For that period of time.
Right, that's exactly.
I got you now. I understand better. Thank you.
Okay. No problem. But do the research on that. Now, if you think about this as well, I had clients that didn't look like me that I would walk in their house. And this was when President Obama was in his first term. And we start talking about things because I always have a conversation with my clients before we transact business. Okay?
He will talk your ear off.
Yeah, you doggone right. Till I get the check. Okay. But anyway. The serious part about this, okay, is that we start talking about things and then I'd ask them about, you know, their finances. I ask them about general things. And we can go through family to whatever. And a lot of times we end up on politics. And the first thing will come out of their mouth, that doggone Obama. Okay? Yeah. As a rule, you really don't want, you really don't talk about religion or politics with any client. Okay? I don't,
you got a 50-50 chance of making somebody angry.
Hey, look, you don't do that. Okay, there's been many times that I really wanted to tell them, no, you're wrong, but guess what? Then I don't eat. So, but the point that I'm getting at is that they will complain about Obama, but they really don't know. You have to understand and look at the policies that Obama passed, okay? You've got many people right now that wouldn't even have health care, whatever you want to think. And you can even ask some Republicans right now that, what do you think about Obamacare? Oh, I hate it. Ask them a different question. What do you think about affordable health? Oh, yeah, that's great. It's the same doggone thing. People do not understand or even pay attention to what's really going on because there's an underlying thing that's going on. It's hatred.
Like I said before, they're lazy. They're not going to do their homework.
Hatred for one another.
They're just not going to.
Got a question for the panel right now. Think about if, and oh God, and this certainly won't happen in my lifetime, if I don't care what race it is, that we all worked together. Can you imagine what a utopia this place would be? Okay. But see, you got a major, major problem. And that is the 5% of people that hold the wealth. That's the last thing they want. Okay. That's the last thing they want. The problem, the major problem that we have, I'm saying this to the panel, is that you've got a major magnanimous case of greed in this world. Okay? And these people who have, like what you say about Dr. Demery, Mike quoted something that you say all the time. Power corrupts power. Absolutely. Am I saying that right?
Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah, it's a quote from Reinhold Niebuhr, a German theologian.
Okay, and these guys, and they have the money has become their god, and they think they are gods in their own right, so to speak. And I'm gonna play something real quick because, oh my God, we've been this is a very, very fascinating discussion we're having here. Let me see if I can make this work. And I'm gonna try my best not to mess this one up. Okay. I'm going to do my best. Oh, here it is. All right.
Say that again. The whole history of America.
Can you guys hear that?
The history of rich white men telling not rich white people that their enemies are black and brown. It starts in the colonies of what would become the United States. Let's remember, during the colonial period, mid-1600s, there was no such thing as white people. I know some people who are now called white find that shocking, right? Because they think whiteness is real, right? But whiteness was created. Europeans didn't call themselves white. We didn't call ourselves white. We weren't all members of one big happy family. Are you kidding? Have you studied the history of Europe? The history of Europe was about killing each other. That's what we did in Europe. We just killed each other before we figured out there were other people to kill. We just killed each other, right? I mean, that was the history of Europe. The English hated the Irish, right? Northern Italians didn't even think that Southern Italians were Italians. The Germans hated everybody, and everybody hated their ass right back, right? There was no team called white, no race called white, but all of a sudden, in the middle of the 1600s, there was. Why? Why was it suddenly necessary to create this thing called the white race? Well, because rich people can count. That's why. And so rich folks looked around, the ones that owned all the land, you know, in the colonies, the colonial elite looked around and they realized something, that they were heavily outnumbered by African enslaved folks, by European indentured servants who were just one level above a slave, or other Europeans who weren't technically indentured servants, but they were still peasants, didn't have any money, didn't have any land, and they could do the math. They added it up and they were like, damn, we got to figure out a way to split these folks apart from one another or they're going to rise up and take our stuff, right? Because after a while, these black folks who were enslaved Africans and these quote-unquote white folks who were poor Europeans are going to figure out they're all getting played by these rich people, right? So ultimately, the rich figure out they got to come up with some way to get somebody in that group on their team. The easiest thing is to get the poor Europeans, right? Because at least they look like you. They sort of share some of the customs and the culture. So they all of a sudden create this thing called whiteness, and they say, now you're part of the club. Now we're going to let you testify in court, enter into contracts, vote, at least if you're a man, own a little bit of land, at least if you're a man, right? And we're going to get rid of indentured servitude, no more of that, because you're too good for that. And we're going to take the white men, now called white men, and put them on the slave patrol to keep black people in line. Give them a horse and a gun and a badge and make them feel big and powerful, right? They're still poor. They still don't have anything. They didn't pay the slave patrol well, right? Just exploited them, used them as a buffer between the elite and the other poor folks, particularly poor folks of color. And pretty soon, the rebellions that occasionally happened where black and white got together to overthrow the elite, those stopped because the divide and conquer had begun to work, right? You could turn people against each other by telling those poor white folks they got to keep these black people in line. And so that divide and conquer gets initiated in the colonies, rich white men telling not rich white people that their enemies are black and brown. Fast forward to the Civil War era. And you have, I'm from the South, right? My people, the elite in my part of the country, right, actually announced that the reason they wanted to break away from the Union and possibly go to war with their brothers and sisters to the North was in order to maintain slavery and white supremacy. They said that at the time. We lie about it now. And we say it had nothing to do with that. But of course, at the time, they didn't have any shame about it, so they just said it openly. Right? The vice president of the Confederacy, Alexander Stephens, said that the cornerstone of the new government was the great truth that the Negro was not the equal of the white man. So that's the reason the Confederacy was formed and existed. But here's the trick. If I'm rich and I want to go to war to protect my ownership in other human beings, my property, but you're poor and you don't own any enslaved people, why the hell would you go fight to protect my stuff? Because I'm a rich person. I'm not going to fight. Rich people don't go to war. Right? Rich people get poor people to go to war for them, whether it's in 1860 or whether it's during the 1960s or whether it's today, right? Rich folks get doctors to write notes for them that say that they have heel spurs and that's why they can't go to Vietnam. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, you can Google that shit because he's sitting in the White House right now, right? Well, I can't go fight. I have heel spurs. Send some poor kids to do that for me, please, right? So that's been a long-standing tradition. So the rich have to figure out a way to convince the poor to go fight for them. But that's a hard thing. That's like a hard sell, right? Like, how the hell, why would you do that? Why would you go fight to protect my property rights when you don't own anything? The only way you would do it is if that rich person comes to you and says, hey, listen, you gotta go fight because we got to maintain our way of life because if these people get free, they're going to take your jobs. No, fool, they already got your job. That's how it works, right? Because if I'm white and I got to charge you $1 a day to work on the farm, but you can get a black person to do it for nothing because you own them, guess who got the job? Free got the job, right? So in a sense, poor white folks would have been better off joining with black folks to overthrow the slave system. That would have raised the wage floor of all working people. But they got took. They got tricked by rich white men telling them that their enemies were black and brown. Fast forward to the 1930s. And you have white labor leaders. They're not even the elite, right? The labor leaders are not the elite elite, but they're the elite within the labor movement. And even they had fallen for it at this point. So they didn't want to integrate their unions. And they would say things like, well, we can't have black people and Mexicans and Chinese folks in our unions because if we do that, it's going to reduce the professionalism of our craft. We have to maintain the integrity of our profession. No, fool, you need more people in the damn union is what you need. And if you don't let those folks in, guess what happens when you go out on strike? Who is the boss going to use to replace you? They're gonna replace you with the very same black and brown folks that you didn't want to work next to, right? And so at the end of the, and then you're gonna blame them for taking your job rather than the white rich dude for giving it to them, right? Divide and conquer. Telling not rich white folks that their enemies are black and brown. And now we fast forward to the president. We got the president of the United States becoming president on the basis of that same rhetoric. Telling not rich white folks that the reason they don't have a job is because Mexicans took them, right? That's the argument. Keep in mind, there's been a net outflow of Mexican folks from this country, out of this country in the last 10 years. Right now, border crossings and actual in-migration at the lowest level they've been since the 1970s. So anybody who believes that is a damn fool, or somebody who does not understand how to do research on the internet, or someone who doesn't care, right? But he says it, he says the reason you don't have a job is those brown folks took them.
We've all been played. Now, I took a lot away from that, and when I first heard it, it reminds me of something that I've been repeating on this network for the last, Dr. Demmer, you know, for 6-7 years so.
Yeah.
Divide and conquer. We've all been played. Okay? And I know from personal experience, I'm going to just tell you a little story here. I remember I was around, 12, 13 years old, whatever it is. And I lived in a neighborhood, and it was sort of different. And the neighborhood was like a middle-class black neighborhood back then. Okay? And the black folks in the neighborhood had houses, and the white folks had trailers. Across the street, they divide across the street. However, for the most part, we got along pretty well. And there were some young white kids that moved into the neighborhood. And he and my friends and my brothers and everybody, we immediately got along. Immediately. We used to play ball together, hang out on the railroad tracks with my mom, beat my butt one time for going up on the railroad tracks, you know, when she told me not to. Okay, all right, but. You know,
that part.
Right. Be honest about that thing.
And okay. So one day we went up, me and my buddies, we went up on the railroad track, and we saw our white buddies coming towards us, and they started throwing rocks at us and calling us niggers. Now, even as young as I was, I'm saying, wait a minute, these cats aren't the same cats that I saw yesterday. Right. Somebody older, I don't know whether it's older friends or parents or whatever it is, told them to hate us.
Right.
And then we never came together again. And so I don't know what the panel took away from that clip, but again, folks, we've been played by the establishment to hate one another, whether you are Mexican, Asian, a Palestinian, whether you're a Muslim or whatever it is, because you've got good and bad people in all races.
Hey, William, let me point something out also that expands that a little bit. Yeah, because you're absolutely correct. Race has been a determining factor for hating others. But also let me point out, since man has existed, we have found mankind has found a way to hate their fellow man through other reasons or for other reasons. And I think an example that I've used here in the past was, look at the Irish. They all looked the same. Their outward appearance was they were just white people, to use that term. But they found a way to divide each other through religion. So race is not always the determining factor. Man will find a way. It may be religion, it may be race, it may be because you have a better piece of property that they want. So the wars that have been fought throughout history, I believe, and I'll stand corrected if anyone would throw your opinion in, but it's been about land, it's been about religion, it's been about race, And there's probably two or three other reasons why man chooses to war against or hate another populace. So it's not just race. Mankind will find another reason to hate and stand on the brothers' necks. They just will.
Yeah. Hey, Mike. Yes. But see, you missed what I said. I'm saying, what is the reason why there's racism and hatred here? And it goes back to the dollar bill. Money. To me, that's the common denominator right there. Okay.
Oh, well, again, land and money and all that and property, okay. That goes all hand in hand. It's not always about race.
No, I didn't say, you're not hearing me. I didn't say it's always about race. I'm saying what drives racism is that is money, Mike. You got the powerful that wants to divide. You got the powerful that want to divide and conquer, divide and conquer us. So no.
By class.
No, Danny, you take on this because I believe the common denominator is money. These powerful, just like in that clip, this man says they knew that they were outnumbered. They had to figure out a way to get control. And I'm paraphrasing right now of us to get control of us. The way to do that is to get us hating one another and they keep all the doggone money.
Danny. No argument.
Yes, I think it's a combination of events here. Because if both of them are factors that go into it, the hatred part goes in there along with the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But you got to consider and realize that once you had certain entitlements in life, which my background versus someone else's background of another race is totally different than what I witnessed. And the experiences that I had with Jim Crow is a different experience with somebody else. Just as for these millennials, they don't know. They didn't experience Jim Crow. They don't understand it the way that I saw it. They didn't. They weren't alive. They weren't a teenager when Kennedy was assassinated and Reagan was killed. I was a teenager and I watched all this stuff. So my whole perception is different than a lot of that. So I think it's a combination of both things, but it's not strictly just money. It's not strictly just racism. Because when you think about, just think about Santa Monica. Santa Monica was owned by a black man.
Mm-hmm.
And through them putting laws on the books and doing different things after that man died, and his widow was still there. They put laws on the books and took that land from these people.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Bruce's Beach.
You know what I mean? Yeah, you gotta look at, if we just look at history, we know that a lot of that is because of the love of money,
mm-hmm.
root of all evil.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple statement, and it's to be proven to be true. The love of money, it's not the money that's evil, it's the person that loves the money that would do anything to keep and hold on to it. And that's how we get back into the racism part of it, because everything ain't about racism. No, it's not, but it is a fact. I cannot take that away.
Can I jump in here real quick? I think I shared something once on Miss Cece's Kitchen. It's funny that you all are talking about this right now, but some people use other people as a commodity, if I could say that.
Yes.
And the reason why I have to bring out this story that I shared, it was the church. You can come and serve my God, but you're not able to sit in the front. Racism did play a part in that because you're not good enough to come to our altar. However, they were going through some financial difficulties. And what did they do? They didn't take up an offering. They sold the person of a lesser quality, which is Afro-American, yes. And they sold them to gain the money. Instead of them going to work, okay, or getting what they need. So this is some of the things that's been spewed for generations to generation. And folks, it's still going on today. Because they use people as a commodity to come up from a lack that they are suffering at the time. And it's really kind of sad. And it's not done, I don't think it's done today in its broader spectrum as it was years ago, but it's still being done. And it's just not, and it's just not with Afro-Americans. It's with other cultures that are outside of one's culture. And I say this all the time, nobody's supreme but God, okay? It is what it is. And I'm being nice right now because I don't feel well, okay? And so my thing is this, I hate that because it causes a emotional genocide when it comes to people's feelings and how they feel. As long as they can keep you in an emotional ignorance, or they can keep you in an emotional state where you're not, your worth is less valuable than the next race or that race. Mm-hmm. And we have so many, and with this war with Gaza and Israel, I've never seen so many Israelis living here and Palestinians. Me and my daughter was talking about this, coming out the woodwork. I never knew that all those people were here, okay? Mm-hmm. But they came out with a cause. But here they have people within their race even against each other. They are even against themselves. And so
thank you.
I think the unification is not there. And that's what, and I'm gonna put it where it lies. That's what they depend on, non-unification. Because as the man depicted, even in his story that William shared, as long as they can keep us, and this is what I got from, at each other's throat, and they reign supreme because of their financial status, then they got it going on. Okay. But when you come together and unify with one cause of loving one another, upholding one another, knowing that nobody's different, we still bleed red, okay? Then we can all, and William said something too, we can all, this world will be, and I said it too, this world will be such an awesome place if we would just not have the divide and we love each other regardless of what you look like and what your status is. This place would be awesome. But we can hardly love each other. I'm just going to be real here.
Right.
We can't leave each other. We got divided households. Okay, we got people looking at each other crazy. And I was sharing with my grandbaby, no, my daughter. I said it's amazing how when we as a black nation or black people want to do better for ourselves, you get some kind of education. You want to move out of the impoverished state, then you're dogged about that. Okay. Because that's the mindset of many, because they don't encourage themselves, and they blame you for coming out of the pot, should I say. But that's where they want you to stay in the victim's seat. And like I said, the divide, and it's all over the place. It's just not in our race. It's even in the white race, they have divide.
Of course.
If they would put down their swords, and I'll leave this with this last statement. If they would put down their swords, put down their ideology about things, their idea of things, what laws they have formed in their own hearts, okay, and realize that I'm nothing just like you, but you're my brother, you're my sister, and we have to uphold each other in love. And the Bible speaks, that's all God wants us to do, is love each other. He is my neighbor, okay? Many of us don't even know who our neighbor is, right? Mm-hmm. And so guess what? Loving your neighbor is just not across the seas. It's right here next to your house.
Right.
It's in your church. It's among this panel, period. Okay? It is what it is. And we have indifferences even sometimes with ourselves. But it's good to agree to disagree. We're grown to do that. But even in that, I mean, I'm telling, and I have to say this, God's been dealing with me personally. It's a personal thing. Okay? People can say what they want to say, believe what they want to believe. But I've personally been corrected. You understand? And so where I've been thinking, I have to say, oh, I apologize, God, because I can't do that. We're all, God said, all souls are mine, regardless of what their status is and what they look like. There's nobody greater than anybody else. And this is what we've been teaching each other.
That's right.
Is the aura that we've been putting out against each other. And that's why we can so freely say things that's a negative towards each other. And God does not like that, okay? Yes, I'm going to love you regardless, but I will tell you this now. I'm not no punk, okay? I'm not going to sit down and let you do what you want to do, okay?
Yeah.
That's the real thing.
The sister's packing. The sister's packing.
Yeah, that part. I'm just saying that because a person is walking a certain status or because a person has gained certain things, the Lord says, shut your mouth. Don't say, well, they think they're more better than me, or they think they're, you know, greater than I am, because that's not the case. Because guess what? We all going to be judged for the works that we do on this land.
You know what? Well said, Dr. Sims. I'm telling you, on a serious note. And just like I talked to each of you, you know, and I talked to Mike quite a bit, because we have this show. Or, you know, have you guys heard about this show, Mad Mike and Wild Wheel Coast to Coast on Thursdays?
Yeah.
It's hilarious. It is absolutely hilarious, but we have great fun. And I'm going to make my point, but before I say that, it was Danny, Dr. Demery, Mike and I, and Dr. Sims, you were under weather. I think Ann, she was out on assignment, had, a company or, you know, but anyway, we decided to switch up the show. Well, I decided that I wasn't going to even do the show, that particular night, because, I wanted you on, Dr. Sims and Ann on. And I had a whole list of things, and I looked at that list, and it was everything is going wrong. And I had about 19 different talking points. Now, you know, couldn't well, we weren't going to go through all of it. I was really upset, right? And so I called Mike, and, before I called Dr. Demery, or Danny, and I said, Mike, I don't think I'm going to do the boomerang today. I said, Ann is not going to be there. Dr. Sims is not going to be there. And I said, no. And so Mike said, no, why don't we do something fun? And you know what we did? We played music and talked about the healing powers of music, good music. And it was a really, really fun show. We played some of Danny's music. We played some of Wayman Tisdale's music. We talked about it. And Dr. Demery was telling us, and Ann, you know this story. And Dr. Mm-hmm. Sims, I'm not sure whether you heard this story or not. And Dr. Demery was talking about when he used to go and see, was it Alzheimer's patients or dementia patients or whatever it was? And you would take your upright bass there. And there was a certain note that you would play. I believe it was a low B that you would play. And they would wake up, so to speak. So
they respond. Yeah.
And then, oh my God, it was so great, because we talked about, was it vibrations? Was it vibrations? What were we talking about?
Frequency. Frequency has the ability to heal, but frequency also has the ability to hurt. And we talked about how frequency is used in the military or for crowd control with law enforcement. But we also talked about how frequency is used to break up, what is it? Kidney? No.
Yeah, stones? Did you say kidney stones?
Is it kidney stones? It's used to the frequency is used outside the body to enter the body and help dissolve or break up the kidney stones. So, vibration, frequency, music, however you want to, qualify it, it does have the ability to hurt or to heal.
Absolutely.
That was kind of where we ended up with the subject.
It was really great, Danny, and I really appreciate your input, because you had a perspective on the conversation, and it was really heartwarming. And Dr. Demery and Mike and Danny and I, we just had the greatest time. And I'm thinking, I'm so glad I didn't do the other show.
Because you needed a break from yourself.
Oh.
So, you know what? The whole thing, when William ended the show, he said, you know what, guys? We don't need the girls at all. We just need us.
No.
Guys. That's what William said.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, you don't have a political party, but you sound like a Republican right now. Damn.
Okay. Y'all know I'm lying, by the way.
Yeah, he is. Yep. That's what I said, Republican. Okay, Danny.
If I could encourage everybody to take a moment, if you haven't